Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody, it's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. I'll be your host, Ron Golden, and I just want to remind everybody listening that the Constitution Hour is made possible by Hollis Buchanan and all the wonderful folks over at PatriotFamilies.com. That's PatriotFamilies with a YS.com. If you're not a member of Patriot Families, I would encourage you to stop by and see what we're all about. Join up, become a member. It doesn't cost anything. I think you'll find that it's truly a family and a great group of people. And speaking of Patriot Families, we're having a Patriot Families reunion next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday up in Indiana. We'll be getting together and just, having a few days to kick back, have a barbecue, maybe drink a few beers or a few glasses of wine for Miss Linda from California. And, just kind of shoot the breeze and just hang out. Do what families do at family reunions. So tonight I wanted to talk about solutions. I've been on the radio here with Blog Talk and Patriot Families since 2008. It doesn't seem like that long. But we've been around for a little while, and hopefully we'll be around for a lot longer. And I see from my chat room being empty and people coming in and then disappearing that we may be suffering from some login issues with BTR. It certainly can be frustrating, Blog Talk, at times, trying to get in, trying to get the sound and everything to work like it's supposed to. It can be very difficult, and many times people just surrender. They give up. But keep trying. If you can hear me, keep trying to get in. We really value your opinions and your input to the show. So, as I was saying, I want to talk to you about solutions. We've been on the air for quite some time now, and we've all discussed many of the things that are wrong with the United States of America, many of the things that are wrong in our own communities. And there's been a general sense of frustration throughout the entire process. One of the things that I heard quite frequently when we first started doing the radio broadcast, and quite honestly, I've heard my whole life, yeah, but what can you do about it? Yeah, there's nothing you can do. You can't fight City Hall, so on and so forth. Well, I got news for you. We can fight City Hall. Miss Linda Sills out in California, one of our Patriot Family members, is living proof that you can fight City Hall. Linda has been very diligent in fighting against the implementation of Agenda 21 in her home state of California. And I think Linda would be the first one to tell you that while the fight isn't easy, and while we recognize that the deck is stacked against us, they are making headway. They are gaining attention and educating people. And, a lot of the things that go on at our state level is really a matter of misinformation on the part of our state legislators and our city and county officials. Yes, there are some that just simply want to make a buck. We're always going to have those creeps in office at some level. But there are many that are simply naive. They're just plain naive, and they don't understand the implications of much of what they're implementing. When I was lobbying down at the Capitol here in Atlanta, and I don't want to overblow that because I didn't attend, 3 years worth of committee hearings and whatnot. It was just in the year 2009 that I did some lobbyist action down in the state capitol, and only attended, a few committee hearings as my work schedule would permit. But nonetheless, we grew from a group of about 8 or 9 people to a group of 180 people who were registered citizen lobbyists, not lobbyists with any big corporation, not throwing money around at our state legislators, but citizens sitting in on committee hearings and really putting pressure and holding their feet to the fire, asking the questions that, of course, the lobbyists won't. And we didn't go there as an opposition, some protest group, you know, like PETA and some of these others that go in there with these radical extremist ideologies. We simply went in with the mindset that we want to challenge every single bill or proposed bill that comes before our legislators on the grounds of our Constitution, our state Constitution, not the federal Constitution, because this really segues into what we're going to talk about tonight. Jurisdiction. The federal government doesn't have any, or it actually has very limited jurisdiction. And the states are the key to unraveling this whole thing. Aside from the Federal Reserve System, the monetary system, which has enslaved an entire globe, there is central economic planning and central banking throughout most of the known world. There are a few holdouts still, but I can imagine the pressure on them is tremendous. Nonetheless, when we get back to our own nest, so to speak, and we look at what's transpired. You know, I had a dream last night, and we were at the White House, and the place was trashed. And in the dream, for some reason, my wife and I had stayed there for the week, and left the door unlocked. And a bunch of kids came in and broke into the liquor cabinet and threw a party and just made a hell of a mess out of everything. And when I came back in, of all people, I know this is funny, Dolly Madison was there and she was furious. And she was trying to clean the place up. And she looked at me and she said, "This is the last time we're renting this place out." And I thought that was kind of funny. But, you know, it really, it is funny, Linda, but it really struck home with me the idea that, you know what, we've been paying lip service to our freedom, to our liberties. And as we're approaching the 4th of July to celebrate our independence from England, well, we haven't had much to worry about from merry old England for quite a number of years, because we've done quite a good job of oppressing our own fellow countrymen from right here within our borders without any assistance from the outside world whatsoever. But we have not been diligent. We have not been vigilant, as we were warned that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. We have been derelict in our duties, and we need to confess that, and we need to do something about it. Now, the reason I bring up jurisdiction is because I think it is the key fundamental issue aside from the Federal Reserve System. And I think even there, the jurisdictional issue can apply. Our Constitution grants to our government, our Congress, certain enumerated powers. But one thing that I think we've lost sight of is the fact that each state is its own independent foreign nation. Just like Mexico or Canada or Jamaica or the Netherlands, or Germany, or Italy. Those are all independent nation states. So too is Georgia, Arizona, California, Texas, New Mexico, They're all independent nations. We have in our Constitution a union, quite similar and yet quite different to the European Union. You're absolutely right, Linda. Each state does have to have the will to use their own sovereignty. And not only that, they need to be reminded, and I think reminded on a daily basis, that they still possess that sovereignty. And it's time that our states began acting, behaving as sovereigns, and stop behaving like spoiled little children on an allowance from Uncle Sam. And that's where we come in. We have got to begin to put pressure on our states to take possession and ownership of their sovereignty in as much as it exists. Let's not us forget that it is we, the people who created the states. So if the states want to get out of hand, pardon me just a moment. Anyway, as I was saying, if I don't have people paging me on the intercom interrupting me, we have got to put pressure on our state and local governments to begin exercising their jurisdiction properly. Hold on a minute. Shop had an alarm go off, so they're sending someone up to the... Yes, you certainly can, Linda. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about tonight, and I want you to look this up. My wife and I just recently went up to visit my son in North Carolina. And on the way back home, we went through a small community here in Georgia called Raven Gap, Georgia. And she had mentioned something about, you know, I'll bet there's a lot of history in this town. And I told her, I said, you know, I seem to remember something from the Civil War era about Raven Gap, but I don't recall what it is. But when I get home, I'll look it up. Well, this afternoon, I had a chance to look it up. And this will demonstrate the level of sovereignty of a state and down to the county and township level. Raven Gap, or Raven County, Georgia, was the only county in the entire state of Georgia that did not secede from the Union during the Civil War. However, they did marshal 4 regiments of troops for the cause of the Confederacy, but they never seceded from the Union. So, even though the entire state of Georgia had seceded, here's this little bitty county up in the northern corner of Georgia that said, no, we're not going to do that. We'll fight the cause. We'll fight for the cause because we believe it's just, but we're not going to follow the dictates of the state and secede from the Union. We don't think it's necessary. Imagine the courage, the moxie, the unmitigated gall of these people not to obey the state. And imagine the state of Georgia and the Confederacy respected that choice and did not try to force the people of Raven County, Georgia, into doing something they were opposed to. Why not? Well, because even though the state is a sovereign, so too is the county. And if the majority of the people in the county don't want to undertake a certain action, that's their right to abstain. And they did. Now, I wanted to put up in the chat a link. I know that I gave this link to Miss Linda the other night, but anyone else that is in the chat room or stumbles in the chat room, this is a website by Larry Beecraft. Larry Beecraft is a tax attorney. He's from Alabama. I had the pleasure of meeting Larry along with Tommy Cryer, who has since recently passed away, and another gentleman named Jeffrey Dickstein, and another guy that you may or may not heard of, who was a former IRS agent, David Bannister. Not the Incredible Hulk, not David Banner, but David Bannister. But I found Larry to be a very pleasant individual, even in spite of the fact that he's an attorney. And he's written a great website. He's got a lot of things put together on there. But in particular, he has a draft motion, or not a motion, but a brief, a legal brief that he's written on jurisdiction. And in that brief, he has compiled every single case that has ever been argued before the Supreme Court on the subject of federal jurisdiction. And many of you may recall back when Jan Brewer had run in with the Federal District Court over immigration law in Arizona, I threw somewhat of a hissy fit. And, you know, I posted an article or a blog on it. I also put up some information from the Constitution itself and pretty much called Brewer out for either being an idiot or just playing a game and being complicit in what's being done in Arizona and the illegal immigration issue. One of the cases that I singled out here was a case in New York, and it can be found on Larry's website. It can also be found if you do a case search, 36 U.S. 102. It's from 1837. And it says, the question before the court involved an attempt by New York City to assess penalties against the master of a ship for his failure to make a report regarding the persons his ship brought to New York. So he snuck some people into New York on his ship. As against the master's contention, in other words, the master or captain of the ship contended that the act was unconstitutional and that New York had no jurisdiction in the matter. The court held this. If we look at the place of its operation, the ship, we find it to be within the territory and, therefore, within the jurisdiction of New York. If we look at the person on whom it operates, he is found within the same territory and jurisdiction. In other words, hey, dude, you're in New York, you're in the harbor at New York City, and you personally are in New York. They have jurisdiction. It's their territory, and you're in it. Here's another quote. They are these, that a state has the same undeniable, unlimited jurisdiction over all persons and things within its territorial limits, as any foreign nation where that jurisdiction is not surrendered or restrained by the Constitution of the United States. That, by virtue of this, it is not only the right, but the bounded and solemn duty of a state to advance the safety, happiness, and prosperity of its people, and to provide for its general welfare by any and every act of legislation which it may deem to be conducive to these ends. Where the power over the particular subject or the manner of its exercise is not surrendered or restrained in the manner just stated, all those powers which relate to merely municipal legislation or what may perhaps more properly be called internal police, are thus not surrendered or restrained, and that, consequently, in relation to these, the authority of a state is complete, unqualified, and exclusive. Now, to kind of dissect that just a little bit, basically what the court said is there are areas within the state where the state may have granted or ceded jurisdiction to the federal government, certain areas for the purpose of building forts and magazines and arsenals and docks. Those are federal enclaves within a state. And many times, even when the state does cede over territory so that the government can put in, say, a military base, you have to go and look at the grant of the property from the state to the government to see if the state gave concurrent or exclusive jurisdiction in the granting of the property. If they did not explicitly state that the jurisdiction is also ceded, then it is not. The state retains jurisdiction even though it's a federal territory and within a state. Another interesting quote from the brief itself: as a general rule, the power of the United States to criminally prosecute is, for the most part, confined to offenses committed within its jurisdiction in the absence of treaties. This is borne out simply by examination of 18 United States Code, Section 5, which defines the term United States in clear jurisdictional terms. Further, Section 7 of that Federal Criminal Code contains the fullest statutory definition of the jurisdiction of the United States. The U.S. District Courts have jurisdiction of offenses occurring within the United States pursuant to 18 U.S.C. 3231. Boys and girls, what that means is for the purposes of the jurisdiction of Congress in assembly, the government of the United States, their jurisdiction extends only to the 10-mile square area known as Washington, D.C., and any federal territories or possessions, and any individuals who are found present in those areas. Federal areas, plain and simple. The state of Georgia is not a federal area. Now, there is some wording in the law that is bothersome. And it's bothersome because of one amendment to our Constitution, the 14th Amendment. And, of course, the Supreme Court. Now, one thing you'll notice, the courts do not write law. I know there's a lot of angst out there, and we talk all the time about the courts legislating from the bench. And that may be the effect of what the court does in some instances, but the court is not the perpetrator, if you will. They are a willing accomplice, but the court in and of itself is virtually powerless to enforce any of its rulings or opinions, a la Andrew Jackson. The court made a ruling that what Andrew Jackson was doing in moving the Cherokee Indians off of their lawfully obtained property was, in fact, unconstitutional. He gave him the middle finger, said, "It's your ruling, let them enforce it." And he went about marching the Indians off in the Trail of Tears. And the rest, as they say, is history. There are cases where an individual there was a lawsuit also on B-Craft's website where two people were suing over the same piece of property. And one gentleman said that he had a land patent from the United States government and that property was rightfully his. And the court ruled, sorry, state of Georgia is the state of Georgia. And the United States Congress has never been in possession of the authority to issue a patent for a parcel of land that it doesn't own. And clearly Georgia owns this property, and therefore your land patent is worthless as the paper it's written on. Now, when I said that there's some apprehension because of the 14th Amendment, you'll notice if you're looking on this website, B-Craft's Briefs, you will notice the date on many of these rulings. And they all predate the Civil War and the 14th Amendment. Not all of them, but many of them. And that's important because the 14th Amendment talks about all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And the Supreme Court has ruled that that little phrase in the 14th Amendment and subject to the jurisdiction thereof does not mean concurrent jurisdiction. It means subject to the exclusive jurisdiction of Congress in assembly. And that raises a question that has been fought and argued in the Supreme Court. The purpose of the 14th Amendment was to grant citizenship to freed slaves. How could an individual be determined to be a citizen of the federal government, a citizen of Congress, essentially, and still be considered a citizen of a state when the two are independent sovereignties in and of themselves? It seems to be a quandary that is not able to be reconciled. This has led to a lot of the talk in the last, 100 plus years of, you'll hear it on Patriot programs and such, talking about admiralty jurisdiction, birth certificates, the fact that you're a federal citizen, that you're a servant or citizen of Congress. And, you know, there's a lot of information out there to give us that impression. One of the things that I've discussed on this program previously is if you simply look at your pocket constitution and the spelling and the usage of the word citizen within that constitution, you'll notice something that happens after the 14th Amendment has been allegedly passed and ratified. Now, that something may seem a small thing, a trivial thing, but prior to the 14th Amendment, every mention of the word citizen within the document of our Constitution, citizen is capitalized, with a capital C. That capital C means something. It's not just styling. That capital C shows prominence. In the 14th Amendment, and every writing in the Constitution after the 14th Amendment, everywhere that citizen is mentioned, it's a little c, which shows dominion or servitude. Now, you might think that that sounds kind of crazy, and it does. To most people, that just seems pretty damned ridiculous, really. Petty, if nothing else. But it's not petty, and it's not ridiculous. In contract law, and I'm no lawyer, but go find one. Or learn some contract law on your own. You can find it in the Uniform Commercial Code. That's the international law governing contracts that was instituted in 1933 when Franklin Delano Roosevelt was our president. But in contract law, anything that is different is called conspicuous. Something that makes it stand out from the body of the document. Like the use of a word being capitalized in every instance and then suddenly it's no longer capitalized. That's conspicuous. It tells you something. Something happened. What happened? We need to know. We need to go find out what occurred here, this change, because it is conspicuous. Now, I'm going to back up a little bit. We were talking about the jurisdiction of the United States and the fact that it is in certain areas. Now, if we go to the United States Code, 18 U.S.C., Section 6, which I will put up a link here for you. I warn you, the link is extremely long. And yes, hello, Oz, and my pops are in the chat room, and FT, hello to you. So there's the link you can go to, and it'll take you, should take you directly to the page that I am on, which is Title 18, United States Code, Section 6. And you will see that it says Crimes and Criminal Procedure, General Provisions, Department and Agency Defined. Now, if we go back one section to 5, since I sent you on the wrong page, 18 U.S.C. Section 5 clearly states Crimes and Criminal Procedure, General Provisions, United States Defined. The term United States, as used in this title, in a territorial sense, includes all places and waters, continental or insular, subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, except the Canal Zone. That was last amended in June 25th, 1948. Now, understand the term United States means, in a territorial sense, Guam, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Hawaii up until 1958, Alaska up until 1958, and so on and so forth. In other words, the jurisdiction of Congress does not extend beyond that 10-mile square in Washington, D.C., and any of their insular possessions like American Samoa, Nancy Pelosi's district, Puerto Rico, which, you know, everyone's pushing to get to be the 51st state, and so on. So the Congress has no damn jurisdiction in the state of Georgia. They just don't. And there's a lot of things that factor into jurisdiction. But when it comes to federal jurisdiction of the federal government, there's a couple of hurdles that have to be jumped over, so to speak. One of those hurdles is it must pertain to a federal question. In other words, whatever the case is, whatever the controversy is, it has to be over federal law. It has to be a question of federal law and the applicability of that federal law. So that's one. So sure, we can say, okay, it's a federal law. Great. Well, we haven't cleared the next hurdle. Where is the person situated? Is the person within the United States, in other words, within the district or within one of the insular possessions or territories? If not, then the court lacks jurisdiction. And that's exactly what happened in Arizona. The federal court has zero, and I do mean absolute zero, jurisdiction over the governor of the state of Arizona or the state legislature of the state of Arizona or over any laws that the state of Arizona may seek to pass within its borders. It is a foreign nation. Aside from the fact that it is a member of the very union that's trying to prosecute it. That court had no jurisdiction. And yet, Ms. Brewer, the governor, granted jurisdiction to that federal district court. How might she have granted them jurisdiction? She showed up. She answered the charge before the court. There is a rule in legal procedure that says all your rights to claim any defect in procedure are waived by your voluntary appearance. That means that if the federal district court says, you know what, we're going to issue you a subpoena to appear in our court to answer to the charge of interfering with the government, federal government's implementation of its immigration and naturalization laws. Ms. Brewer could simply have said, no, you don't have any jurisdiction over me, and I'm not going to come trouncing into your little court and play your game. Sorry. Nice try. But your court has no jurisdiction within the sovereign state of Arizona. She didn't do that. She went running right down there with her attorney general and feigned out trying to fight this thing. Well, you're not going to win. If you're going to run into a federal district court as the governor and attorney general of a state, once you've granted jurisdiction to that federal district court, the only controversy that exists at that moment in time is whether or not you did what they said you did. The applicability and the constitutionality of the law has no bearing whatsoever. You have submitted yourself, you have thrown yourself on the floor prostrate before the damned court and said, go ahead and punish me if you find me guilty. What the hell is wrong with these people? Why would anyone ever put themselves in that position as a sovereign? That would have been like King George coming over to the United States after losing the Revolutionary War and throwing himself at the mercy of Washington. He probably would have came out pretty good if he'd have done that, but nonetheless. And we have a caller on the line. I believe this is Miss Linda from California. How are you, young lady?
Hey, doing pretty well. How's everything going? And hello to everyone in the chat room. Yeah, it's really interesting what you're discussing, because what's happening here is tonight we're doing a meeting trying to strategize for new ways to explain to people what this Agenda 21 is, how to stop it, you know, what we're doing. There's a huge conference, I think it's in October. I'll have to check with the kids tonight, but all these greenies are converging on San Diego at that time, and we have to be down there and explain to people what, you know, the other side of it. And then with my own city council, I'm just racking my brains trying to figure out how to get this through to these people. And what I need to ask them is, Oceanside is a charter city, which gives them more latitude in their jurisdiction as well, which means they don't have to be pandered to by Sacramento. So that may be a good plus for me at this point. But I'm going to find out from Mayor Woods exactly what, you know, what that means, and explain to him about certain counties and cities like that having their own jurisdiction, et cetera.
Well, and yeah, you know, absolutely. The counties and cities, the townships, absolutely have their own jurisdiction. And where you'll find that is going to be in your state's constitution.
Okay.
And usually in the state constitution, somewhere along the line, there will be a proviso or a provision for home rules for counties and townships.
Okay.
Of course, that's how you end up with mayors and a city council and a city manager
right.
and a county manager and so on, and a county board.
Right.
And most of the states will recognize the county or the township or the city's sovereignty all the
right.
way up to a point, and
mm-hmm.
that point is they are not allowed to write criminal law.
Right.
They can write local ordinances and rules. The moment they try to enforce those local ordinances and rules as a criminal act, like a misdemeanor,
mm-hmm.
they've crossed the line unless there is an underlying state law that they're relying on to back up their ordinance or home rule. But
right,
certainly these counties cannot be forced by the state to implement
mm-hmm.
most anything. There's very little that the state can literally force the county to do against its will.
Because there's civil cases and then there's criminal cases, and there are separate courts and separate issues. They have codes, you know, like
Correct.
Penal code. Yeah, okay.
Well, and you
got to
be
that.
Careful because the code, it gets very sticky. When you start getting into the legal aspects of things, you know, I had discussed on a previous show that there is a distinct difference between law, statute, and code.
Right.
And whenever you read the code, notice that they put commas between law, comma, statute, comma, code. So that's
wow.
telling you that there is a differentiation and they are totally separate things.
Okay.
A code is not a law. A statute is not a law. A law is a law.
Yep.
A code or a statute may carry the force and effect of law,
mm-hmm.
And it gets somewhat complicated, but it is not
sure.
law. A code or a statute is prima facie evidence or evidence on its face
okay.
that a law exists somewhere that says kind of pretty much sort of what the statute of the code says it says.
Okay.
So you actually, to know the actual law, you actually have to go back and read what
read
was
it.
Passed by the state legislature.
Exactly.
And
okay.
many times what happens is it'll go to a committee after the law has been signed into law, it'll go to a committee and they will set up a agency or bureau and write all the regulations to implement the law. And many times in writing the regulations, they completely go outside of the realm of what the law
yeah.
was written for to begin with.
Oh boy. So that's now you made my job harder.
Sorry.
Oh, well.
But nonetheless, we have to make sure that on every level within our own state, okay,
uh-huh.
that we are putting pressure on our
yes.
local and our state elected officials
people
to stand up and pull themselves up by their bootstraps and stand on the sovereignty of the state or of the county.
Yes.
Where we have a problem is that the federal government uses funds to extort
yes.
our lawmakers.
Yes, and so that thereby they put guns to our heads and make us dance on the end of a string. And that's what they're doing with this Obamacare and every other stupid thing they've passed.
You're
like,
absolutely correct. See, one of the things that we do is we don't ask the right questions. You know, we look around and ask, why is the government doing this or that? Why,
uh-huh.
ladies and gentlemen, does the federal government have your state administer Medicare, Medicaid,
right.
workers' comp, unemployment compensation. Why is the state in charge of all those things and not the federal government, since they were all federal programs? And the reason is really simple. Because the federal government lacks the jurisdiction and the constitutional standing to implement those programs.
The only way
they can get those programs implemented is with the assistance of the state.
Sure.
This is exactly what the justices told you again in the healthcare ruling.
Right.
Okay, we had the ruling on the individual mandate. But then we had another ruling where the federal government was threatening to withhold Medicare and Medicaid funding to the states that didn't expand their Medicaid role in order to facilitate Obamacare. And the court said that the federal government can in no way do that. It would be wholly unconstitutional. Why?
So that's why all these states are refusing to comply with the setting up the exchanges.
Absolutely. And with that one ruling, what the court established is that the states are indeed still sovereign.
Sovereign. Thank God.
And because the states are sovereign, they can refuse to go along with implementation
program.
Of programs that come down from on high in Washington, D.C.
And that's a good thing for us. We just got to get, I don't hold out a whole lot of hope for the state of California under Jerry Brown, but at least I'm going to, I don't know if I can do it before our trip to Indiana, but certainly afterwards, I'm definitely going to sit down with a couple of those council members in private and state my case. I mean, I've got to explain to them. Some of them don't know about Agenda 21, and I do believe that there are three on the council board that are complicit with this nonsense, because they like all the money and they want the power and they want all the favors to come with it.
And you know what, Linda, that is one of the purposes of doing what you're doing.
Right.
By going in, you're going to ferret out the jackals.
Okay.
That are in it to make money and don't give a damn about the people within their township or their county.
And those are the folks that you guys
need to target to get their butts thrown out and get somebody else elected in their place.
Well, that's what we're doing with the three. We call them the terrible trio, but we pretty much know that this one person, I won't say his name, but we know that he's after political gain. I've known it for a while. Just by what I've seen him do in public when he campaigns, because he wants to be the mayor of Oceanside and then later on, go up the ladder and go into state assembly, et cetera. I know that's what he wants to do. So, and he's not, to me, he's like one of those snake oil salesmen. Man, he doesn't use a teleprompter, but you'd swear he had Obama's writers. This guy is smooth, but I can see through him now because I know what he's doing.
You got to wonder, and I don't know what they get paid in California. I can tell you what a junior or freshman state legislator gets paid here in the state of Georgia, and that's a little over $17,000 a year.
Oh, no, they don't pay him much, but he's going up the food chain. He wants to get higher up in the, in the oligarchy, as I call it. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, and it should be obvious, these folks that go out and spend, you look at the presidency, tens upon millions, billions of dollars to get a damn job that pays $400,000 a year.
I know.
Really?
I know.
Really? It doesn't make sense. Don't tell me that these folks are doing it out of the goodness of their hearts because they're angels and they love the American ideology so much. They love the idea of the American Republic, that they want to save the United States of America, and they're going to go up and, by God, change things.
Yeah, yeah, right.
They go up there because they know if they can get that catbird seat, that's where the big money's at.
Yeah, well, exactly. And what's happening, I know, with several of these members that we're trying to oust in November, because many of them are up for re-election, and we're campaigning against them rigorously like we did with Prop E. And I think if we continue the fight, we'll be successful. But the reason I'm learning so much is because when I attend the city council meetings and then I watch the way these guys vote and on what things they're voting, what their reasoning behind it is, and when they ask questions of city planners, this is telling me all I need to know. I mean, you know, so I'm educating myself right in the belly of the beast, so to speak. And that's what I need to be doing, and I've got to get more information, you know, on my own regarding jurisdiction and sovereignty, because and I've got to get a copy of the California State Constitution so that I can really lay it into these guys, because otherwise I can't go in empty-handed or they'll laugh at me.
That's correct, and you we really have to know what we're talking about when we get in there and start talking about jurisdiction. And you know that I have spoken before on the whole thing on birth certificates, the 14th Amendment, and this right here, Title 18, United States Code, Section 5, 6, 7, 8, that's where all this comes from.
Wow.
When you start reading through this, if you know, I posted it, I know you're not at home right now. One of the things that you're going to hear in the Patriot movement at large is admiralty jurisdiction or maritime jurisdiction.
Right.
And one of the arguments that I heard when I very first started getting into this stuff is that if you go into the courtroom, you'll notice that in the court, they have a flag that has a gold fringe around it.
Yep.
And the ideology or the insinuation is the gold fringe signifies a captured flag. Okay?
Oh, my gosh.
Now, all of these things have to do with military action.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes back to Lincoln.
Oh, boy.
And martial law and the fact, I mean, we know from history, if we read our history, that the South was divided into five military districts that were under military rule. The whole of the United States as it existed in 1861 was under martial law. Go look it up. It was reinforced in 1863 with the publishing of the Lieber Code.
Right.
Okay? So when we look at these things and we read that 14th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, it is so critical to understand that anyone born or naturalized in the United States and subject to its jurisdiction, and the Supreme Court said that subject to its jurisdiction means the exclusive jurisdiction of Congress. And then we go and we read 18 U.S.C. 5, and we find out that, okay, you know, there's these certain areas where the federal government has exclusive jurisdiction. It's in the Constitution. They'll have exclusive jurisdiction in all cases, whatever, in the 10-mile square and other territories and insular possessions. So when we get into maritime law, we know that a ship, when it is docked at a dock or a loading area in the harbor, it is in its berth.
Okay.
And there has to be a birth certificate, which is another way of saying a bill of lading.
Right.
Now, when we get into the special maritime and territorial jurisdiction of the United States defined, the term special maritime and territorial jurisdiction of the United States, as used in this title, includes the high seas, any other waters within the admiralty and maritime jurisdiction of the United States, and out of the jurisdiction of any particular state. And any vessel belonging in whole or in part to the United States or any citizen thereof, or to any corporation created by or under the laws of the United States, or of any state, territory, district, or possession thereof, when such a vessel is within the admiralty and maritime jurisdiction of the United States and out of the jurisdiction of any particular state. Now, that is all kind of run together and can get very confusing. One of the things that you'll hear people talk about is your documentation, your driver's license, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Your name being in all capital letters. This goes back to that big C versus little c citizen thing. It's conspicuous. There are only a few places in grammar where it is acceptable to put a name in all capital letters. A vessel is one of those.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, there is some similarity between vessel and vessel.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, the contention goes that after the 14th Amendment, through the use of the birth certificate and creating a corporate fiction, in other words, a straw man or a vessel,
mm-hmm.
That we are all possessions of the United States, meaning Congress and Assembly. And therefore, Congress has exclusive jurisdiction, as outlined in the 14th Amendment. But yet we have a Supreme Court just ruled the other day that the states are still sovereign.
Yep.
And the United States Code is very clear that you have to be out of the jurisdiction of any particular state.
Okay.
Okay. And remember the other day we were reading in the tax code where it said the several states, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the several states are clearly and distinctly different from the United States. They're each sovereign. And a state of the United States would be a territory, district, or possession of the United States, and not one of the several states. The two are not the same.
Okay.
So when you're reading federal law or code and you read a state of the United States, it doesn't
mm-hmm.
mean what you would normally believe it to mean.
Think it is.
It doesn't mean one of the several states. And this is infinitely important. When we were talking about it the other day, and I made sure to point out that definition where it said one of the several states. And the reason I pointed that out is because it's distinct. It is totally different in wording than another definition where it says, you know, in Title 26, the tax code, where it says the United States, when used in geographical terms, means a state, territory, or possession of the United States.
Right.
Well, any normal person reading that would think that a state of the United States means Georgia, Texas, Alabama. Wrong answer. If they meant to include those areas, they would have said the several states or one of several states. To prove that, they had listed in the code, the tax code, if you can go back and find old copies, prior to Alaska and Hawaii being granted statehood, they were listed as states of the United States.
Wow, because they were territories.
Because they were territories. They were not states yet. They weren't one of the several states. Once Hawaii and Alaska, once Alaska was admitted, granted statehood, the definition in the tax code changed to take Alaska out. And then in 1958, when Hawaii was granted statehood, they changed the definition again in the tax code to remove Hawaii from the definition. Well, that should be all the evidence you would need to recognize that those are two wholly different entities.
Right. Got it. Interesting. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's a very complicated rabbit hole.
Yeah, it looks like I'm going to be buying lots of ink to print out stuff because I need to have concrete stuff in my hands. You know, I can't rely on emails. Sometimes these guys don't get them. They send them to their assistants. No, or staff, they call it, that type of thing.
Right. So, well, that's why I posted in the chat, and I'm pretty sure that I emailed it to you, that link to Larry B. Kraft's website. He has got a ton of good information. And when it comes to jurisdiction, he has every Supreme Court case ever cited involving federal jurisdiction. And towards the end of the thing there, he actually narrowed it down to 140 of the most important cases. There were 450 that were cataloged.
Good grief. Wow, and that's a lot, huh?
Yeah, basically it says federal jurisdiction brief. This short memo explains what is federal jurisdiction via Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the U.S. Constitution. To draft this brief, thousands of cases construing this part of the Constitution were read. About 450 were cataloged, as shown below, and then a small number of those, about 140, were referenced in this brief. So he references about 140 Supreme Court cases.
Okay.
And one of the things we have to remember, and that's kind of what I started out talking about in the beginning of the show, is that the court gives its opinion.
Right.
See, it's the Supreme Court opinion, or their ruling, whichever one you want to call it. But guess what? Their ruling or their opinion is just that. It's their opinion.
Yeah, because it's just like...
It's not the law.
Right. You can't change what, you know, that the sky is blue and we're the third planet from the sun just because you want to. You know,
correct.
It doesn't make that Obamacare any more legal or constitutional than the man on the moon. So
exactly.
They can argue all they want, and we're just got to fight back. I mean, that's all there. We just got to stop complying.
Correct.
Yes.
And the court is giving its opinion, and this is something we have to remember. When the court gave its opinion, number one, they were split 5-4, and these are presumably the best legal minds in the country. Okay. So first of all, they couldn't all agree. Second of all, it's their opinion, and their opinion is based on what? A long line of case precedents over the last 100-plus years. Former Supreme Court opinions, you see.
Right,
so it's an evolutionary thing with the court. Once you get a Supreme Court, to render a judgment or an opinion that exceeds the bounds of what we know to be the common sense meaning of a word or the application of tax or whatever. Once they overstep and acquiesce and agree and give their opinion, well, then everyone in government feels that they have justification to keep pushing the envelope in that direction. The problem is the court is just giving you their opinion. It doesn't mean that it's something that's correct, or it doesn't necessarily mean that it's proper policy, as Roberts pointed out. It is not their job to do your job for you. That's exactly what he was telling us in that ruling. It is not the court's job to divine the tea leaves and tell you what is proper public policy.
Yeah, and you know, you open up a whole can of worms when you talk about setting precedent, because, you know, the Constitution is not supposed to be a living, breathing document, and that's why they wrote it the way they did, and they have been shredding it and twisting it for so long. No wonder we don't recognize our country anymore, and they refuse to stop doing things that are not within their purview to be doing. And we keep letting them do it, Ron.
You're absolutely right. We do keep letting them do it. And one of the things, one of the damnedest things, and we need to put pressure on our state legislatures.
Yep.
It's a real, you know, there's a fascinating story out there. A guy named Bill Benson wrote a 2-volume book called The Law That Never Was. And it has to do wholly and completely with the 16th Amendment and its passage.
Mm-hmm.
And what Mr. Benson did is he went to every single state that then existed in the United States at the time of the passage of the 16th Amendment, which was 1916, right? There were only 40...
Yeah.
1913, correct. He went to all 48 states. There were only 48 states in existence at that time. He went to every single state in person.
Wow.
Went to the state records and got certified copies of the roll call vote for the 16th Amendment from every state legislature. And you know what he found out? They didn't have a 3/4 majority. The damn thing was never passed.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow.
They actually in several states, not the state themselves, but the federal government took and flipped the vote. They flipped the recorded vote. You know, the vote may have been 236 against and 45 in favor, and they flipped it and recorded it the opposite. And the damn little bastard up there in D.C., I forget his name now, declared it ratified.
Oh, my gosh.
Said the amendment passed, and it's now ratified.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And Mr. Benson, I mean, at his own expense, out of his own pocket, and the guy at the time, I guess, had his own small airplane, a Cessna or whatever, him and another guy, he flew around to every damn state and got certified copies. So, I mean, it's not like this is just dude took it off a website somewhere. Okay? They are certified copies. You know what the court said? None of that really matters.
Oh my gosh!
The federal government, the secretary of the Department of State for the federal government said it was ratified and it stands as law.
My God!
Even though they've got undeniable proof that it wasn't.
Oh my gosh! Oh boy! Look what we're up against.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah. This is all good information because I know I'm going to need it because I'm not stopping. And somebody said on one of the shows, either yesterday or today, on the air, said, as long as we're still allowed to be on the air and talk, it ain't over yet. So we just keep fighting, dude.
And, you know, the interesting thing to me, and I want to look into this even further because a sheriff, we've talked about county sheriffs having a tremendous amount of authority within the county.
Right.
I don't believe for a moment a county sheriff can grant jurisdiction to the federal government over me personally.
Exactly. And if you have a constitutional sheriff in your town, you got a good thing going on because they'll stand up for you. They will be your last line of defense.
Yep.
And they'll do it.
You're right.
In September, there's a huge conference in Vegas, which will give me a great excuse to drive over there. But it's the California Sheriff and Peace Officers Association meeting, the actual annual conference. So I would love to go to that one to get more involved with them. So, yeah, Sheriff Mack will be there. Sheriff Lopey will be there. All the guys from Arizona, you know.
And, you know, if we can get, and I think this is a great idea, and I just popped into my brain here talking about the county sheriffs. If we can get together our groups, all right, not on an individual basis, but our groups, our groups within our county, and go confront our county sheriff and say,
absolutely.
Look. Okay, here's where we start the process. We're going to start with you. And here's the problem. Our county is acquiescing to the state capitol. And the state capitol is acquiescing to the federal government. And all of you are acting in collusion to undermine our liberty, our freedoms, our individual rights within the state.
Yep.
So here's what my group proposes to do, Mr. Sheriff, just so that you understand. We're going to get together, and we're going to, we all have cell phones now. So we're going to begin a process of not paying our property taxes.
And
when you decide, Sheriff, to come out and try to force the sale or the removal of an individual from their home, we're just going to hit the code on our phone and broadcast to everyone, and they're all going to show up, and we're not going to let you take it.
Interesting concept. Yeah.
We're going to force you to do your damn job.
Yeah,
and maybe that'll,
maybe that'll
force our county commissioners to do theirs.
Sure. Yeah.
Hit them where it hurts them the most, in the pocketbook.
Yeah, that's the problem. We keep feeding the beast.
Exactly. We are paying for our own damn demise.
It's horrible. It's the worst form of slavery on the planet. Man, they got Pharaoh got nothing on these guys, huh? Jeez. Unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, there's things we can do, and I know that there's a lot of good folks trying, and I just need to get my people in California all on the same page and start, you know, working it. That's all we can do. That's why I'm going to a meeting tonight. I need to explain to them about this, ask their opinion on it, also get some ideas on how to approach city council and, you know, just go forward. I'm going to do it. I'm going to keep hammering my city council until I'm heard. That's it.
You bet. And, you know, we have these representatives at the state level and at the mm-hmm. federal level. How can my state representative, my congressman, even remotely claim to be representing me if there's 235,000 people in his district?
Yeah, I know.
He doesn't represent me. He represents the money interest within his district, and that's all he damn represents.
True.
Now, it might be that I come down on the side of many of their ideas more often mm-hmm. than not, but he doesn't have my interest at heart. He's not there representing me, and they've shown time and again that they don't give a damn about the average guy in their congressional districts. I mean, just look at the situation we're in. And clearly, you know, trying to fight Washington in Washington is just a futile effort. It's like beating your head against a wall. Well, there is a way out.
They don't care. They don't listen. They don't act, you know. I mean...
No, because you don't have any damn money. Let me tell you, when I was going down to the state capitol, when I would walk in wearing that lobbyist badge on my pocket, my breast uh-huh. pocket. Well, I was treated like royalty.
Of course.
I mean,
all
it didn't matter.
Dollar signs.
And you know, the funny thing is, it doesn't say Republican or Libertarian or Independent or Democrat on there.
No, they don't care.
They saw that lobbyist badge, and by God, they were all just fawning to, you know, everybody wanted to shake my hand. They were all my long-lost cousin, my best buddy.
Yeah, because they look at it and see dollar signs. That's what they see.
Damn right. That's exactly right.
Oh, my God.
It was
what
like five to honey. Yes.
Oh, Lord.
Exactly. And I, you know, I sat back and just laughed at these guys. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Dude, and, you know, I'm grinning ear to ear. I'm thinking, yeah, I'm not with Georgia Power, dude. Sorry. Hate to break it to you, but I'm not with Georgia Power. And,
that's
you know,
funny.
They're out there. And I had Democrats there telling me, well, I voted against, I'm not in favor of abortion. I voted against that, or I voted against this. And I'm like, you're so full of crap, your breath stinks. Don't try to placate
that's
me.
True.
Okay? But they do. They get out there and they try to stroke your feathers and get you mm-hmm. all cooing. And, oh, you're just buddy-buddy. Horse manure.
Yeah. Either they're pandering for votes or they're pandering for money or both. And it's pretty ludicrous. You're right. It's bread and circus, and it's really getting under our skin, and it's time we stood up. So that's why I do what I do, and I know you guys are doing the same thing. I know Bill fights on both levels. He goes against illegal immigration. He goes against Agenda 21, and he puts posts out there. He gets information on the Facebook page. It's amazing stuff. Hell, he's got, it's like old home week. Everybody here, like Lynn and Barbara Decker, they all know Bill. And he's all the way in Indiana. It's like, oh, this is good. Nice small community. I love it. And we're fighting this thing together. So we've got to raise awareness, and we've got to just keep pounding it, keep holding their feet, because that's the only way out of this right now.
So. Well, you know, one of the things that I would encourage everyone out there to do is look up your state's constitution online.
Right. Okay.
And in my humble opinion, the single most important portion of your state's constitution is the preamble.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Now, I'm going to read you I'll read you the one from the state of Georgia. It says, to perpetuate the principles of free government, ensure justice to all, preserve peace, promote the interest and happiness of the citizen and of the family, and transmit to posterity the enjoyment of liberty, we the people of Georgia, relying upon the protection and guidance of Almighty God, do ordain and establish this Constitution. Now, one of my state legislators, who is deceased, unfortunately, I had the privilege of sitting in a committee meeting with him.
Wow.
And he asked one of the other state legislators from down south on a proposed bill. He said, you know, the whole reason that we are here as elected officials is contained in our preamble. To perpetuate the principles of free government, ensure justice, preserve peace, and promote the interest and happiness of the citizen and of the family. He said, so my question to you is, what portion of this bill accomplishes those goals, and exactly how does it accomplish them? Well, you could have heard a damn pin drop.
I can imagine. That's
because
awesome.
There wasn't a single thing in the whole of the bill that was being proposed that did even one of those things.
Wow. Oh, that sounds like the last 100 bills passed out of Sacramento.
Yeah, and that's exactly the point.
Yeah.
That we need to be active. We need to be more active than the damn lobbyists. And, you know, they know that they've got us over a barrel. It's difficult because many of us work for a living.
Yeah.
But not only do we work for a living, we work for the living of the guy down the street that's on food stamps and unemployment. We work to pay him as well.
Special. I know.
Yeah. So we have to rely on folks like you, Linda, who aren't working to go and fight for us. And thank God there are some of you out there, because by and large, most people that are on Social Security or that aren't working, they don't feel the way that we do.
Yeah, and plus the fact there's some of them, even if they're on the fence, if they are on Social Security, they're older than I am, and they're not in good health, so that's going to deter them from doing these things that I'm able to do, thank God.
Oh,
and
sure.
Our little groups are so small is because, again, as
everybody
you say,
at
the
work.
Majority. Yeah, exactly. So,
and, you know, most of the older folks, out of respect, out of a tradition of respect, would not challenge elected officials like what you guys are doing. Not until it hits something that's really close to home for them and they get really pissed.
Yeah,
then they will.
Exactly.
But most of them were brought up in the tradition of don't rock the boat.
I know. And don't fight City Hall. Well,
right.
we're coming to find out that is not what the founders' message to us was. Not by a long shot. Oh, my God, the warnings they gave us. Oh,
yeah.
But now we know, and now we're here, and we ain't going away. I mean it. You know, the problem is with a lot of people, because they, whether they're older generation or not, they were indoctrinated as well. They didn't know what was going on. My mother's almost 90 years old, Ron. She did not know the history that I have shown her in my book. I didn't know 4 years ago. I mean, I had a pretty good idea, especially of 1933 Germany. You know, I didn't get in depth in it back then when I was 20 and 30. But Mom says, I never knew any of this stuff, Lynn. She says, they didn't teach us anything. And she's no spring chicken. So this is how far back this revisionist and erasing of history has been going on in the school system.
Absolutely. And to me, the hypocrisy just screams at me from the page. I'm looking right here, paragraph 4, freedom of speech and freedom of the press guaranteed. This is in our state constitution.
Okay.
No law shall be passed to curtail or restrain the freedom of speech or of the press. Every person may speak, write, and publish sentiments on all subjects.
Wow.
But shall be responsible for the abuse of that liberty. Now, I want to tell you a quick little story. About 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, there were some pretty popular bumper stickers that said Buck Fush. Okay. And there were a few that didn't say Buck Fush. They said it F. Bush.
The other way. Yeah.
Well, the state passed a law, an obscenity law.
Wow.
And they began writing tickets for people who had obscene bumper stickers on their cars. And wouldn't you know it, one lady got pissed enough that she fought it all the way to the state Supreme Court. And the state Supreme Court said, sorry, that's wholly unconstitutional and not in keeping with the Constitution of the state of Georgia. And they struck the law down.
Awesome. Yay. See?
There's only one problem with that. That law is still on the books, and cops still write tickets for it, and people still pay the damn fines.
Oh, my gosh.
Because
Dang.
They don't know that it's not right. Constitutional. And people will go and send a check for $150 to the state or to the county or to the city rather than
Lord.
Fight it. Because their time is more valuable to them than that.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
We just had a bill here in Georgia called the Constitutional Carry Act. And I took to task one of my local representatives here, Charlize Byrd, who I had a little run-in with when I was lobbying down at the Capitol. But nonetheless, I'll give her the benefit of the doubt every day. And our Constitution here says, arms, right to keep and bear. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. But the General Assembly shall have power to prescribe the manner in which arms may be borne. Well, that's an infringement.
Yep, that's crazy. It's kind of like the oxymoron inside of, yeah.
Right, and you know, so here in Georgia, I mean, and it is a fairly liberal state when it comes to guns, and I don't mean liberal in the traditional sense of a liberal Democrat. I mean very open and you know, appeasing to the citizens, I guess.
Right.
In exercising their right. But if I'm on my way to, say, the gun range, I'm supposed to have my guns in one portion of the car, and the magazines and the ammunition are supposed to be in a locked container elsewhere in the vehicle. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
I do the same thing. The same nonsense goes down here in California. They drive me crazy.
Ugh. However, in Georgia, and a lot of people don't know this, and I have to check the law because they have recently changed some things, but I know at least at one time in the state of Georgia, if you had a fishing or hunting license, you could conceal carry.
Ah.
I think, personally, that the concealed carry laws are a bunch of crap.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you can have a gun, but you can't hide it. You got to, okay, so then I can open carry. Well, not if it's loaded. Well, what the hell good is the gun then? What, am I going to beat him in the forehead with it? You know,
exactly.
And by the way, officer, the criminals don't bother abiding by any of the damn rules you guys set. You are aware of that, right?
Yeah, it's like, why do the cops have guns on their hips? To protect
right.
themselves.
Right. Every cop's sporting a gun and pepper spray and a nightstick. What the hell are they so afraid of? Oh, I'll tell you what they're afraid of. An armed populace is what the hell they ought to be afraid of.
Yeah, true.
Which is why they want to disarm all the law-abiding people.
Sure.
Yeah, Doc said taser. Yes. Well, I can tell you the pepper spray is quite effective. Having been pepper sprayed 3 times myself. And yeah, Bill, I'm with you. I've always had a problem with authority. But it's not just authority, it's oppressive authority. When authority oversteps the bounds, when they cross the line of common sense and decency, that's when I have a problem with authority. When someone tells me I can't do something, like I can't build a deck in my backyard without permission and paying exorbitant fees to the city and the county.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Doc said in Michigan they just okayed tasers, but you need a concealed carry permit. What a bunch of crap.
Oh, it's sick. It's really horrible. I know. They make people here in California go jump through hoops just to have pepper spray. It's ridiculous.
Right. I have to have permission to carry some kind of self-defense device.
Not according to the Second Amendment.
You know, and you talking about California and the pepper spray, that, I remember a commercial, and it really, it exemplifies the mindset of society. And the guy was in California, he was visiting, and he was lost. And he's got a map, and he's wandering around, he's trying to find, you know, something, I don't know what it was, Oceanside. And he walked up to this little Asian girl on the street corner, and he says, "Excuse me, ma'am," and she pepper sprayed the snot out of him. And he's laying on the ground screaming, and then she's tasering him, you know? and it's funny, but at the same time, you know, we've bred this because of all of these nonsensical rules and ordinances and laws that they've passed, that the only people that would dare approach someone on a deserted street corner probably have bad intentions.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, having self-defense techniques and weapons or whatever is, you know, a good thing, especially for walking alone females. But, you know, and you also need to understand, too, all the different scenarios. Like people, all the crime is up here. We've got home invasions all over the place. People are hiding out in people's garages. People are being carjacked. You know, you've got to be very careful of and knowing your surroundings and also kind of prepare your mind and your body for any eventuality, but still not be completely paranoid. Just, you know, you can usually tell when somebody's, you get that weird feeling. Yeah. So you just got to pay attention to those natural instincts to protect
Absolutely.
Yourself.
You know, one of the best pieces of advice my father ever gave me is, you know, when you're in that situation and you know there's no talking your way out of it or walking away, you just look the guy straight in the eyes and just punch him right in the friggin' Adam's apple. And if he doesn't fall on the ground gasping for air, run like hell.
There you go.
It's crazy. Oh, I got 26 minutes.
You still have
a lot
of time left. Huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I got 26 minutes left. I did 2 hours because I wasn't sure, you know, how long I would ramble on the whole jurisdiction thing. But I think it's infinitely important, and I think it's important that we understand it at the local level. You know, we've been talking forever that it's the local level is where we need to start the grassroots, and I agree. And I think the jurisdictional issue is the one that we need to hang our hat on for getting our state off their butts and telling the government no. Just say no.
Exactly.
You know, we've got all these Republican governors that claim that they're not going to implement the health care law. And yet you've got a whole bunch of Republicans in Congress that, while they say they want to repeal Obamacare out of the left side of their mouth, out of the right side of their mouth, they're talking about their plan and their,
I know,
their deal for government-run health care. And you just got to, you want to grab them by the ears and shake the crap out of them, but there wouldn't be anything left but tennis shoes and teeth.
It's true. And that's what makes me crazy. It's like, why don't they understand the reason we're so PO'd is because we don't want a national anything anymore. We want to pare it down. We can, the states can take care of themselves, and they better start taking care of themselves. Or these
absolutely
guys are just, I mean,
absolutely. And this is something that, you know, Ron Paul has been talking about for a very long time, you know, with regard to abortion. The federal government has no business, number one, being involved.
Right.
The states have no business in allowing funding for such a thing unless the state passes a law that okays it. Atlanta, Georgia is one of is a very large abortion area, and because I think because we have a very large black population in Georgia, in Atlanta proper, and you don't hear, you know, the race pimps like Jackson and Sharpton, and the blowhards like his benevolence up there in Chicago, Farrakhan. You don't hear them out in the black community trying to draw awareness to the fact that, you know, 8 out of every 10 aborted fetuses is a black kid.
No, of course not. You're not going to hear that. You're not going to hear the truth from any of these clowns. I mean, we're lucky to get the truth between amongst ourselves and through the internet at this point. Yeah, it's tough. So I'm really happy. I got to get in and see if this meeting's going on, and thank you so much for letting me ramble on and figuring out what to do. And say hi to everybody out there in Blog Talk Land, and God bless you guys.
Absolutely, Linda. God bless you, and knock them dead.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Go get them. Okay, hon. Thanks. All right, everybody, and that was the lovely Miss Linda Sills. Linda has a program here on Patriot Families and Blog Talk every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right from the left coast. And Linda has been tirelessly fighting Agenda 21 out in her home state of California, and in particular, Oceanside. This evening, she is in Escondido for a meeting, and just trying to, if nothing else, bring awareness to the Agenda 21 project and the private-public partnerships that are being undertaken under the umbrella of the green movement and climate change and all of these other BS notions that, you know, I think a lot of these movements have been started by well-meaning people. And there's no doubt that we do have environmental issues that we need to take care of. And again, that would fall on the state and the county at the local level, and the township or city at an even more local level. The interesting thing about the law is it's not insufficient to bring remedy to many of these environmental things that happen, people dumping chemicals. If someone is dumping chemicals in a stream or a river, then they're affecting everyone who uses or relies on that water source. So it's not just an isolated area of contamination, and they are, in fact, damaging property. We have laws for that. There are ways to prosecute these people. And it should be done at the local level. When we get the federal government involved, the only thing that happens is the attorneys on both sides get wealthy. And the people who were actually injured, who have the actual injury, get little or no compensation at all. And I know Mr. Bill Strong up in Indiana has been fighting also very tirelessly on Agenda 21 and illegal immigration. And in his own backyard there against corruption at the city level and the county level, as it should be. We have to be engaged. We have to be active at our local level. And we have to let our elected officials know what it is we expect. It's like being a manager and managing subordinates. You have to let your people know what is expected of them. You can't just assume that they're going to do what it is you want them to do. One of my former employers used to tell me something that's very, very true. People will do what you accept, not what you expect. And we see the benefit of that right now. Because we do not make our expectations known. So we have an obligation and a duty to our elected officials to give them a chance to do what's right. But they may not know what that is. And like the old saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Well, you know, that's one of the things that our opposition has been infinitely better at than we are. Complaining. Oh, we can complain on the radio. We can complain on our television. We can throw things at our TV. We can vent to our neighbor. We might even take the extraordinary step of writing into one of the opinion columns in the newspaper, or maybe a blog. But have we ever bothered to take the issue straight to our city councilman or our state representative? And I don't mean just sending them a fax or an email. Actually picking up the phone and making an appointment to sit down and talk with them. And you know, there is strength in numbers. The Tea Party has been very successful in bringing together large numbers of disgruntled Americans. When one of your local officials has 300 or 400 Tea Party folks descend on them in a respectful manner and bring the issues to bear, it puts tremendous pressure on them, more than a single individual. And Bill, you're right, it's probably not going to endear you to them. But just like being a good manager at a job, your job as a manager is not to make everyone your friend. Your job as a parent is not to be your children's best friend. And your job as a citizen is not to be your representative or councilman's best friend. It is to direct them in the proper course of action and what's expected of them as far as their job performance. We have to get back to a place where our elected officials understand that they truly are public servants and we are the public that they are supposed to be serving. We need to put pressure on to cut off the money train. It's out of hand. I don't believe we're going to win the fight overnight. But there is a growing tide of public opinion. And while that tide is strong, is the time for us to be making our move to organize just like the other side, but for the right cause, for liberty, for freedom, for individual rights, for property. It certainly won't be easy. But most things that are worthy aren't easy. And I wholeheartedly believe that when it comes to defeating the federal government, all that is required is for the states to say no. On an even more local level, for my county sheriff to say no. You know, there's been a great story about a county sheriff up in Montana that had some government agents harassing a couple of his citizens. And it just happened that those government agents were from the Internal Revenue Service. And he stopped them side of town, on the side of the road. He informed them in no uncertain terms that if they came into his county to harass one of his citizens again without first announcing their presence and asking his permission, he'd throw their asses in jail. That's how we beat them. We need more people like that sheriff. We need more people that aren't afraid of their government. And we need more people that are willing to use logic and the rule of law against them. It doesn't require bloodshed. It doesn't require a call to arms. It requires logic, reason, and a knowledge and understanding of the law. And we as Americans need to understand our sovereignty within this hierarchy. And Doc, you're right. The states have been extorted by the federal government, and they are crack junkies when it comes to federal funds. We've got to stop that. Look at the result that it has brought us over the last 80 years. An out of control government that is thoroughly corrupt from top to bottom, from the Fed to the state to the local, county, and city government, corrupt. The political parties are corrupt. And they give lip service to the truth. We need to change that. And all of this so-called progress and growth, it's bogus. Look around. Look at all these cities and states where all the big boom was going on during the property boom, the housing boom. Where are they at now? Look at Detroit. My God, look at Detroit. What do they have to show for all their progress today? Nothing but ruin. It's run down. It's fallen apart. Well, Doc, I'm here to tell you, show me a state in the within the United States of America that doesn't have a surplus, and I'll show you a group of liars. The states have surpluses. We talked about this last night. The state of California has $600 billion in investment funds that we know of. Collectively, all the counties within the state of California all totaled $8 trillion in investments. Don't tell me they need surpluses. They have surpluses. Those surpluses aren't counted in the budget. Those surpluses to fund state employees, their pensions. Not all of it. Not all the $8 trillion is just for that purpose. But that's one state. I read in 2009... the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report for the state of Tennessee, which, by the way, the state of Tennessee that year was claiming a $600,000 budget shortfall. So they were going to have to raise some taxes. But when I looked through their CAFR, and I'm no accountant, they had enough money to fund their entire state government for the next 12 years without collecting one cent of revenue from anyone for 12 years. No fines, no fees, no taxes, no nothing. 12 years. They're telling their citizens they're broke and they may need a tax referendum on the ballot. That's what's going to happen. Yeah, you're right. And you know what? The damn states and all these pension funds and crap, it's just become a big investment firm for union employees. And the taxpayers are funding it. They seem to have forgotten the fundamental principle that government is not supposed to operate at a profit. Government is not supposed to be a for-profit proposition. It's got to change. We've got to be the ones to change it. Because nobody else is going to do it. The people that are on the receiving end of the largesse of government, they're not going to fight to change it. Banks that just got their, you know, $1 trillion bailouts, they're not going to change it. Why do you think that the largest contributors to both parties is the banking and investment industry? Small wonder. The big corporations aren't going to change it. They know they've got enough push or pull that they can influence government in their favor. They can call Obama and get a waiver. You and I can't do that. Unless we pull together. And it's a lot easier to get a large group of people locally in a state to put pressure on the state than it is to get a large group of people from a state to go to Washington, D.C. and put pressure on their congressmen or their senators. It's doable. This is very doable. We just have to get very organized. And we have to have a clear and strong message. And Linda's right. We have to be able to back it up with solid facts and proof, not just rhetoric. We'll leave the rhetoric to Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck, and the rest of them. That's what they're good at. That's what they get paid for. Entertainment. I'm not entertained. I'm pissed. and I'm tired of pulling the wagon for everybody else. I want to pull my own wagon. Now, that may be selfish, but that's just the way it is. I have a family. I have a family to support, and I want to make sure that they have all the support that I can possibly give them. And I don't want to leave this life not knowing if I've done everything I could. I don't want to leave a legacy to my grandson of living in a fascist, Marxist, socialist, Muslim, dictatorial, democratic society. I want to leave him a constitutional republic. In a society that has respect, not just for one another, but for the rule of law. It's a tall order, because we have gone a long, long way the other direction. Guys, thanks for tuning in tonight, and thanks for showing your support. You know, you guys just showing up shows support for the program, and I really appreciate it. I'm going to lead us out with a song. This is a song done by Mike Church and his guys called Mr. Jefferson.
Washington, Lee and Rutledge, Hancock, Wilson, White, Sherman, Adams, Hall, and Rodney, Penn, and Dickinson.
For the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence and the 37 who signed the Constitution.
And here's to you, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. We'd like to know why you haven't read all the bills you filed. We'd like for you to read them for yourself. Look around. Stroll around the land, the brave and free gone. And here's to you, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. $1 trillion debt, so we don't know.
Hide it in your made-up FICA trust fund.
It's a little secret, just the congressman will know. Worst of all, you pass this debt on to the kids. They think we're fools, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. Ripping up our Constitution every afternoon.
Get themselves a raise with no debate.
Laughing at founding fathers when they've got to choose. Everything they want us coming true. Where have you gone, Rodman? turns its lonely eyes to you. Woo-woo-woo. What's that you say, Mr. Jefferson? The Gipper has left and gone.